Live from the studios of KVTA, Ventura County's inspiration station, this is The Kim Pagano Show. Kim is Ventura County's mom and so much more, bringing value every day in every way. Join Kim and her friends every Saturday as they interview interesting and inspirational guests, everyone from authors and entertainers to doctors and experts. From A to Z, Kim's got you covered. And now here's Ventura County's mom and so much more. It's Kim Pagano.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life. I just want to say I hope that you guys are all having an incredible weekend. I hope that it stays not raining, and I hope we got a good weekend ahead of us. I am excited for you to be here. I want to give out our phone number, 805-419-0008. And, of course, we'd love to hear your input. Also, if you have a story or a business or you would like to be a part of our show, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. I start all of my shows with something uplifting, and today's is be who you are, say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. So with that, I encourage us, this is our life. Live your life and be your best you. So I am excited to introduce my first guest, Ed Long. And of course, we're going to find out a little bit about investing in today's volatile economy. And Ed is actually CNBC nationally ranked top investor, CFA, and just in time for tax day. So, Ed, welcome, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about, first of all, who you are and how did you start learning how to do this? And I'm going to be taking notes, I'm sure, along with my rest of my listeners, right? I have a funny story to tell you from a long time ago, but go ahead. I'd love to hear about you.
Sure. Well, I'm a principal in Avenue Investment Management. We manage portfolios for clients around the country and institutions, and we specialize in growth stock investing and high quality bond investing. And our firm's been around since 1970.
Wow. Okay. So it's a little crazy out there now, right? Knowing what to go into and what, you know, like you get to a certain age. And I mean, even when you're younger, but you have more time, so you can kind of, you know, regroup again. But when you get a little older, there's no time for regrouping, correct?
That's correct. You have less time to, recover from any kind of big potholes. I would agree with you.
Yeah. So right now has been a really good time of putting your money in the bank and actually making money off your money, correct?
Yes, interest rates have gone up a lot recently in the last several months, so you are getting a nice yield on money markets and CDs. That's correct.
Right. But then people that are buying properties or homes are paying a higher interest, correct?
Yeah, there's a flip side of that. So the interest cost on the other side of the ledger does cost, investors more, especially, those borrowers who are taking out loans. So there has been a big shift. It was the reverse not too long ago, around the pandemic time. So times have definitely changed.
So what's your best, thoughts about with maximum interest rates and inflation and uncertainty? We're in a political time right now on top of it. How should retirees best protect their wealth this year?
Sure. Well, the first thing to remember is that there's never a good time to start investing or to make some big changes. The world is very complex. It always has been. And every 4 years we have an election and we fret about it. But the statistics show that election results really are insignificant, statistically speaking, in terms of the outcome. So I would sort of take that off the table if you're a long-term investor. Certainly in the short term, things can swing in either direction, but it usually evens out. But in terms of like the environment we find ourselves in with elevated inflation, some geopolitical risks, it's very important to remain diversified, which most people are. But more importantly, to invest in the higher quality assets out there and try to avoid things that are highly leveraged or that are suspect, that don't have competitive advantages, because those companies have a hard time sort of managing, economic changes, if you will. So it's important to remain with the highest quality investments you can. That'd be a good place to start.
Okay, that's great. That's good. So what is the right asset allocation for most individuals? What does that exactly mean?
Sure. So, as a practitioner, we deal with all kinds of clients. And so the right answer is it depends on, each person or institution's, particular situation. But broadly speaking, most folks, the vast majority of folks, should have an allocation to stocks because stock investing has shown to be one of the best asset classes over long periods of time. And there are a couple of reasons for that. Number one, they pay dividends, most of them. And they're also great inflation hedges. So even though we find ourselves in a heightened inflation situation at the moment, you just can go back into the 80s and 70s, and inflation was a lot worse, but stocks did fairly well. And the reason for that is they can pass along some of the price increases and they can make more profit. So stocks are really good investments for most environments. If we have hyperinflation, they're not. But they're very versatile investments. And if you stick with them, history shows that you can make a lot of money.
Right. And it's interesting of all, when a lot of us were back in school and we talked about history and none of us were really interested. This is where it really works with, you see what happened in the past, and that's really like a head on into the future. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. I mean, you can even look, in recent times, we had higher inflation in 22, where stocks initially went down, but then they recovered and companies figured out how to deal with sort of higher prices. And, 2023 was a great year in the stock market. And this year has been a pretty good year, too. And we've had sort of an uptick in inflation with the last CPI readings. So, history, both on the short term and the long term, shows that stocks are a great investment in most environments, and you really should not be scared out of investing in them just with the headlines.
Yeah, I like that. And now, what do most investors get wrong when interest rates and inflation start to go high?
Yeah, I think it's maybe a little broader than that. I think investors tend to look backwards and tend to fight the last war, and we're all sort of geared to do that, and we really have to fight ourselves and sort of look ahead. And I think also, learning from history is important. Many people, unfortunately, don't do that, and they speculate at the wrong time, and they don't remember or study history. And so I think if we can avoid those things, as well as being emotional, I could talk hours about this, but, most people tend to invest emotionally, and there's two, broad emotions, fear and greed, and we want to avoid both of those and not get too crazy when we're feeling really confident and not get too pessimistic when things are down, when stocks are down. Those are the times to be buying.
Got it. And here's a question. We all have a bank account, most of us, right? That's kind of like the normal thing. But can you make as much money in a bank account as opposed to, really investing in, like a management firm? What's the difference?
Yeah, I mean the bank accounts, the CDs, the demand deposits, or the money market funds are sort of short-term investments, and those yields can change as the interest rate changes. So, they're not going to yield the same in 2 years from now as they are today. But in terms of stocks, they tend to go up on average. They tend to compound at 8 to 10% growth rates over long periods of time. And of course, there's ups and downs with that, but that return is one of the highest among the asset classes. So sitting in cash is not really ideal. And the other reason is if inflation, were to accelerate, you're basically eating into your gains. So if you can get, let's say, 5% in a CD now, but if inflation is 4%, you're really only netting a 1% gain, and that's not attractive at all. Whereas if stocks compound at 10% and you have 4% inflation, you can do the math. It's a 6% real return. So that's why stocks are more attractive, but they're also more volatile. So there's no free lunch. So you have to be able to take the volatility with stocks, and that's why you're getting paid for it, so to speak.
So if somebody, what should investors consider to be paramount, high or low risk?
Well, it depends on your risk tolerance. So, you sort of have to know what you're able to handle. If you're younger also, you can obviously take on more risk, like you were saying at the onset. So it really depends on your age and your personality. And of course, the last thing is what are the capital markets telling you and whether you should be taking high risk at the moment or not. And that's where we come in and where our expertise comes in and helps clients navigate that part. We also help them understand their own, personal preferences and risk tolerances.
Right. And should a savvy investor follow market trends? Is that advisable?
I think market trends, if you're following it more on a secular basis, meaning what are the, enduring trends that, like growth, like what's sustainably going to grow in the future, whether it be, cyber threats or artificial intelligence or things like that, those market trends are very important to follow because they're not going to be fleeting and they're going to be here next year and the year after that. So I would encourage your listeners to keep educating themselves about those. But the short-term trends are hard to pinpoint and, certainly very hard even as a professional to kind of call. So focus on the long-term things that things that understand. Those are good places to start.
I love it. I love it. Ed Long, first of all, are there timing issues to finding investment success? My last question to you.
Sorry, could you just repeat that, please?
Are there timing issues to finding investments successful?
There really isn't. Market timing is very tricky, and the studies show that even if you invest sort of in the worst possible time period in a given year, if you have a long-term investment horizon, it really won't matter too much. So the best way to avoid market timing risk is to sort of invest over time. It's called dollar cost averaging. I'm sure your listeners have heard of that. And that's something that takes it off the table. So invest a little bit, every month, every quarter, and that way you'll be sure that you won't be picking the top. But again, the hardest thing to do is to start investing, and there's no perfect time, and that includes today.
There you go. Just start. Just start now, right? It's like savings. So I love it. Ed Long, thank you so much for joining us here on the Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life and Business. And, of course, when you start putting some money away, you'll feel really good, right? So thanks again.
That's correct.
Love you to connect in a...
Did we lose you again, Kim?
No, I'm here.
Okay. Wrap it up, please.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. Sean Rowland. And we're going to find out what the 5 top antibiotics to stock for in case of emergency, since we've already done that. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's a beautiful morning.
If you're a business owner or looking to be one, put Littlefoot Construction on the top of your list. Littlefoot Construction specializes in restaurant remodels, tenant improvements, office remodels. Call Littlefoot Construction with all your commercial and industrial needs. Littlefoot Construction works with big or small businesses. Or even if it's a dream, Littlefoot Construction will make your vision come true. Call Littlefoot Construction at 805-491-2759. That's 805-491-2759 for all your construction needs.
Manhattan of Camarillo, located in the heart of the beautiful Santa Rosa Valley, is a locally owned, multi-regional classic Italian restaurant with an extensive wine list. You'll be greeted with warm, friendly, attentive service. Wednesday evenings from 3 to 8 p.m., Manhattan of Camarillo offers a signature 3-course menu for $25. For a bit more casual atmosphere, check out Trivia Thursdays in their beer garden with a full bar and craft beer selections. If you're into live music, come see some of Ventura County's premier local talent where you can dance the night away on a large dance floor. Manhattan of Camarillo's private wine and banquet room holds up to 40 people. Make your reservations today or book your next private party. Dinner is served Tuesday through Saturday with easy access off the 101 at Pleasant Valley Road.
Call today for a reservation at 805-388-5550.
That's 805-388-5550. Or go to themanhattanofcamarillo.com. TNT Anger Management Services knows that sometimes we get overwhelmed at work and home with our deadline. Try these three tips to help you regain order and focus. Number one, staying focused on the priority should be your main objective. Number two, we all know the word multitasking is highly overrated, so try to keep it simple. Number three, set boundaries for yourself, eliminating side talk and chatter, which can be really disrupting when you have a deadline. These are just some ways to collect oneself, complete your lead task. For more information, visit TNTAMS.com. Or if you're experiencing a lack of focus and anger, please feel free to call Norman Thatcher, the facilitator and owner of TNT Anger Management, directly. 818-264-6255. That's 818-264-6255. Or go to TNTAMS.com. Are you ready to empower your child with the skills they need to safely enjoy the water? Kim O'Brien with Survival Swim with Kim, Infant Aquatics, teaches self-rescue swim skills to children of all ages. Self-rescue skills can save a child's life if they accidentally fall into the water. After losing her daughter to drowning, Kim became a certified survival swim instructor to help families in Ventura County protect their children. Survival Swim with Kim teaches kids 6 months and up how to roll and float independently. Don't wait. Check out SurvivalSwimWithKim.com. That's SurvivalSwimWithKim.com or call Kim at 805-620-7177. That's 805-620-7177.
Now back to the Kim Pagano Show.
Finally on KVTA.
And of course, our next guest, Dr. Sean Rowland. We're going to talk about, I love this because this, I think everybody needs this to really know the top five antibiotics to stock for emergency use. And let's welcome Dr. Sean. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, tell us a little bit, about yourself.
Well, I am a family medicine physician by training and founded Jace Medical back in... Really, the idea for it came about in about 2017, but it took a little while to get all the pieces in place, and it was right in the middle of the pandemic, founded this company that was really the first of its kind to help people be better prepared medically.
I love it. I mean, honestly, you know, obviously, this was the first pandemic that so many of us have gone through, and the lack of medication, the lack of medical assistants, doctors, nobody knew what to do. And so I think we all need to be an advocate for ourselves and our family. And so I love this idea, and that's why I wanted to bring you on. First of all, let's talk a little bit about your company. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so you actually almost stated our mission statement there. We exist to empower people to be better prepared medically. You touched on you know, that empowerment aspect is really important because nowadays we see this stuff in the news every day about shortages and just whether it's shortages of medication or it's hard to get a hold of your primary care doctor or whatever the case may be. And there just have not historically been a lot of options for those people. And so that was, you know, for me, I was working in a community hospital, and we were dealing with shortages of really important medications even before the pandemic. And that was what caused me to just stop and say, what is going on? I work in, you know, in the United States. I work in a place where our health system is the best in the world. And pre-pandemic, shortages were even further from anyone's mind. And
yeah,
so that was really
I don't think they let us know that, the public, right? I mean, unless you I have a really good friend that's a doctor, and unless you're in like close with somebody, you wouldn't know that there was a problem till there was a problem and you needed something.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, and it was especially back then, you know, this was 2017. It was never in the news. I'd never heard about it, which is why it was such a shock to me. The pharmacist comes into the hospital, you know, the hospital pharmacist, and says, "Hey, doc, this vital antibiotic that you use every day for the sickest patients, we hardly have any left, and we're not going to have any for we're not sure how long." That was just a shocking wake up call for me, and what it led to was finding out that in the United States, when we talk about these medications and basically every medication, because in the U.S., on a what's prescribed on a daily basis, 95% of what we consume here in the United States are what we term generic medications. These are medications that have been on the market for a long time. They're relatively inexpensive to produce for the most part. So they're all these generic medications, right? Of that generic class, virtually 100% of those generic medications come from outside the United States. We're talking China, India, some other countries. And so that was another thing that they didn't talk about then, was that we had no production capacity here in the U.S. for these vital medications. And so these are some of the pieces that kind of, for me, were just caused a lot of concern. And so that was where I started to look for a solution, and ultimately that's where Jace came about.
Well, I really love that. What is the name of your company?
So it's Jace, J-A-S-E, Jace Medical, and that Jace, there's a little story there. It stands for just antibiotics saved for emergencies, but it was also the name of our family dog, which is really why we chose it. And in Greek and Hebrew and Old English, it means healer, and so it worked for our company.
There you go. I like it. I like a little passion behind that name. So,
well,
you know what's interesting? So how do we stock up? I mean, you know what I mean? Where do you get these? Because that's a big problem right there, correct?
Yeah. Previously, you know, you people who were really worried about this, really had no options. They would maybe go south of the border and find a pharmacy in Mexico. Maybe they just didn't, if they didn't finish a course, they'd keep some of their medications on hand, get them from a friend.
Right.
And so not having any options. So what did we do? We basically combined, I'll say COVID was horrible, but one of the things that came out of it was probably a quicker adoption of telemedicine as a viable means of delivering healthcare. And at the end of the day, at Jace Medical, this process of getting a hold of medications before you need them is a telemedicine process. So it involves, you've got to have an encounter of some sort with a physician so that they can legally prescribe these medications and have everything be above board. And then it's dispensed by a pharmacy that's licensed here in the United States to dispense medications in whichever state you're coming from. And so packaging all that together so that you're not having to make an appointment with your primary care doc, wait however many weeks that takes, go to them, convince them of what you're trying to do here. And at the end of the day, you're getting quite a powerful group of medications. And so you're trying to talk to your doctor about this.
Right.
You're paying out of pocket for this whole thing also at the end of the day. And then you've got to take that prescription and go to whichever pharmacy you want to go to and pay retail rates for all these medications.
So and then you have to get it approved by your insurance.
And then if you want to try and go through insurance, you can do that. But insurance, 9 or 10 times out of 10, they're not going to approve medications to be given before they're needed. And so you're left paying whatever the pharmacy asks you to pay. So instead, we took this whole process. We made it as convenient as possible. It's all online. You fill out some forms. The doctor sees your health history. They're able to prescribe the medication. They send it to a pharmacy that we've prearranged the best pricing we can and pass that on to our patients so that this is something that you can afford to pay for out of pocket. And I feel really passionate about, I just came across an article, this was just yesterday, it was on Axios.com, and it was highlighting that we've hit a new high water mark in the history of our country in drug shortages. The list is now 323 medications long. It grows every day. This is a problem that's getting worse, not better. And if you're waiting for or hoping that your medication doesn't end up on the list or hoping that the government's going to do something to figure it out in time, that's just, it's not a good plan.
Yeah, you're waiting for a problem to happen. I love that.
Yeah.
Dr. Rowland, let me ask you a question. Okay, first of all, how do we know which antibiotics to use for infection in an emergency? Okay, so
really?
You know what's interesting? I have to just say a shout out to some of the urgent cares. sometimes I just broke my foot the other, like, well, it's been a couple months now. I'm out of my boot. So, yay. But when I first did it, it was like, okay, let me just get through this. No, I think there's actually a problem. So do I go to an urgent care where they actually, you see a doctor, you get an x-ray right there. They gave me a boot and then said, you should probably follow up with a specialist. I was almost all the way done at that point. Or do I go to my general doctor who's going to send me for an x-ray, who's going to send me for, you know, do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, it's the unfortunate reality of a health system that's, I don't like to call it broken, but it's pretty close. It's hard to navigate the pressures that have been placed on healthcare providers from insurance companies and in how they deliver healthcare, and being there's too many pieces between the patient and the doctor, whether that's an insurance company, whether it's a pharmacy benefit manager, whether it's an administrator. There's all these pieces in between, and at the end of the day, it makes it really hard to just practice medicine and do what's best for the patient.
From a passionate, you know, like what doctors got into and why they, you know, why they're doing it. So, yeah,
exactly.
That's a big problem. So, anyways, when I was in there, there was like almost like a antibiotic. If you have a sore throat, this covers this part of your body. Then there is one that covers your stomach. Then there's one that covers if you have a skin infection, right? I was like, oh my gosh, I think I took a picture of it because people need to know that for their own, you know?
Yeah, so we've always been, as healthcare providers and, you know, the FDA and the DEA and all these systems that are kind of the gatekeepers, right? And we tell you when it is and isn't okay to take these medications. There's a certain, that is an important role, but I think sometimes you can find yourself, or we find ourselves as healthcare providers, maybe being a little bit too far on the side of, hey, I've got to control access to this medication. You only get it, you know, in the most dire of circumstances. The truth is, if you've got a real bacterial infection, it needs to be treated, and time is of the essence. You don't have time to wait for an appointment, go see the doctor, then go find your medication, and hopefully the pharmacy has. I just had a patient reach out thanking us because they bought their Jace case, their 5 antibiotics, and thinking, you know, okay, peace of mind, I feel good, I'm covered, I hope I never have to use these. Well, sure enough, they had an infection come up, and they were able to get into their doctor, and their doctor gave them a prescription for an antibiotic, which they then took to the pharmacy, and the pharmacy said, oh, it's going to be at least 3 or 4 days before we can get this medication in. Well, you can't wait 3 or 4 days when you've got a bacterial infection. Thankfully, one of the medication that they were prescribed is one of the ones in our kit, and they were able to take the medication right away. They realized, oh, I've got this medication already. And that's a perfect use case scenario for why I think everyone should have at a minimum this base Jace case in their home, the same as you have ibuprofen and Tylenol. You mentioned, you know, understanding which shop antibiotics do what. You need to know when it's appropriate to take them, because it's not always appropriate. They are powerful medications. But when it is time to take them, time is of the essence. And so there's 5 medications in our kit. They come with a book that explains, if you can't get a hold of your doctor, you can't get a hold of the healthcare professional in that moment, whether you're traveling, whether it's, you know, a natural disaster, the healthcare system's overrun. You've got a guidebook there that explains, here's the medications you have, here's the symptoms that you're looking for, here's how to take the medication properly. We built this pack very specifically to think, okay, if you are cut off from access, what are the most common bacterial infections that people encounter, number one? And number two, what are the most deadly infections that come about that if you don't have treatment for, you're virtually guaranteed death is near 100%. And we're talking, in that case, we're specifically talking about bioterror attacks. So we cover the most common and the most deadly. And there's 5 antibiotics in that kit. I'm happy to go through them, but that is at the end of the day what you're getting.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's go through them, please, if you can.
Sure. So the 5, start with amoxicillin. Everyone's probably familiar with that. It's actually a medication called amoxicillin clavulanate. It's kind of like a super amoxicillin. And after that, we've got azithromycin. Everyone's familiar with the Z-Pack. So the amoxicillin clavulanate, that's a great medication for things like sinusitis, dental infections, pneumonia. Then you've got azithromycin. That's the Z-Pack. That one also is great for those upper respiratory infections. Can also be used for traveler's diarrhea, even some sexually transmitted diseases, and amongst others. Next on the list is a medication called ciprofloxacin. This is a pretty powerful antibiotic. It treats things like urinary tract infections, intra-abdominal infections, also can treat traveler's diarrhea, infectious diarrhea, but also is an important medication for that bioterror that I mentioned. We'll call it a backup medication for things like the plague and anthrax. These are the kind of agents we would see in a bioterror event. And then next we have a really powerful, this medication works for a lot of different things called doxycycline. Some people might take it for acne, but it's really a powerful drug that can be used for skin infections, bite wounds, whether that's human or animal, can be used for things like even the MRSA, which people may have heard of. When you've got a skin infection, that with MRSA can be really hard to treat. But then also, this is the go-to for bioterror. And so we provide it in an amount that should there ever be a bioterror attack in your area, the government has plans to try and get everyone to be taking prophylactically this medication for 2 months. But having it already on hand, you're not going to be waiting in line to get a hold of this medication. And then lastly is a medication called metronidazole. Metronidazole is a great medication for intra-abdominal infections, sexually transmitted diseases. A lot of these antibiotics, when you take antibiotics, you know, they're going not just the bad bacteria, but even the good bacteria get affected in your gut. And sometimes you can end up with an overgrowth of that bad bacteria. And some people may have heard of it. It's called C. diff. And get it when you take antibiotics. And it can be horrible. It's a diarrhea illness. Metronidazole is a treatment for C. diff. And so having that on hand is also an important part of the kit. So those are the top five. I mean, those are the five that kind of round out our base case. From there, we have about another 30-ish medications that you can add on, things like for yeast infections, things like medications for nausea and vomiting, like Zofran, ivermectin's on the list. There's quite a few add-ons that you can, depending on what you're interested in, you can include in your kit.
I love it. Okay, so here's the million-dollar question. What is the shelf life of these antibiotics? Because seriously, you know, you have them in here, and I'm like, oh, these are like gold. Should I throw them away because they're past the date, or should we keep them?
Oh, man, I have to. Okay, so I'm going to give you two answers.
Okay.
The first is every medication comes with a use-by date from the pharmacist, and the pharmacist is under the regulations of the state that they're licensed in, which virtually all states will require that the pharmacist put an expiration date 1 year from the day that medication's been dispensed. So it'll say used by, and it'll be a year from when you got that medication.
Yeah.
The manufacturer has their own use by dates. They're typically about a year. They can go out sometimes to 3 years. So that's the official position, right? Now, unofficially, there has been a lot of research done to tell us what is the true shelf life of this medication. We're worried about two things when we talk about shelf life. Number one, how long does it really retain its potency? Because if I'm taking medication that's, you know, 50, 60% potent from what it was, it's obviously not going to do what it needs to do, or I need to take a higher dose. And how do we know what that potency is? So we're worried about potency. Number two, we're worried about degradation of these chemical compounds to something that might be dangerous for our bodies. And in the past, there were antibiotics commonly on the market that if taken, you know, too far past their expiration date, did degrade into very dangerous substances. And so those were medications that that even though their potency might be okay or not, you know, the potency is the secondary consideration. You just don't want to be taking something that's going to hurt you. So nowadays, they've done all these studies. Specifically, we chose these medications because they're part of these studies. They don't degrade to toxic substances, number one. That's first and foremost. And number two, regarding potency, there's a government program. It's called the Shelf Life Extension Program. People can look into it and see a lot more detail here. But what it's found is that as long as you're storing these medications properly, and that means keeping them cool and dry, humidity is really hard on medicine, as is heat. So keeping them cool and dry, we're talking about pills and capsules here. The studies have shown that their potency, they'll maintain 90%+ of their potency on average 5 years, but many of them go beyond 10 and even to 15 years where they retain that potency. So
15
the expiration
years? Date, wow.
Yeah, so it's a long answer, but my recommendation is, if you're talking about things like, again, not all the medications are the same. You can go to the list.
Right.
You can see what they talk about in that program. But talking about these antibiotics specifically, it's always best to take something that's unexpired, that you've got there, that's fresh. But if you're in a dire situation, you can't get access to medications, and you've got nothing else, but you've got some, an old D-pack, it's okay to hang on to that. If it's been stored properly, then there's a good chance that's going to be okay. At worst, it's not going to hurt you. It just may not be as effective as you hope.
Got it. You know what's funny? We have four adult kids, and they, you think about it in my grandparents. Okay, you'd walk into the refrigerator and nothing had dates on
Tell
it. I'm talking about ketchup. Sure. I'm talking about mustard, right? And now my kids look at everything and they're like, oh, Mom, you're not going to eat this, are you? And they empty my whole refrigerator. And we just read something saying, and the same thing. Then I started going through all my medicine and I'm like, okay, dumped all this stuff out, And I'm like, wait a minute, does all these really matter? And as you're telling me this, I'm like, Because in an emergency, you want to have those kind of things.
Yeah, it's hard. There are some medications, especially ones that would be very dangerous for kids to get a hold of, and potentially, they overdose, they take too many of, and that can be really hard and deadly. And so that's the fine line. You want to make sure your medications are stored safely and securely. And if that's the case, then there are certainly medications that you could hang on to, perhaps a little beyond their use-by date.
Wow, I love this. Dr. Sean, my last question to you, what are the risks associated with purchasing antibiotics online without a prescription? Talk to us about that, especially right now with fentanyl being so crazy and, people not knowing what they're getting.
Well, you just said it there, not knowing what you're getting. If it's unregulated, if it's coming from overseas, if it's not, then it's same as maybe going down into Mexico and not necessarily always knowing what you're getting. I'm very critical. I'll be the first to admit I'm very critical of groups like the FDA when it comes to, finding out why we are going through these shortages. But at the end of the day, there is a process. There are controls in place that are important, that the FDA serves an important role in saying, okay, this medication has been approved for this use. We can vouch for its safety, and going through that process. I guess I would say at this point in time with a company like Jace Medical, there's no reason to go through and roll the dice or play roulette.
Taking
a
chance.
It's there. So you can get it prescribed by a board certified physician licensed in your state, dispensed by a pharmacy that's licensed in your state. There's no reason to go around and now previously people had to do creative things.
Dr. Sean,
taking antibiotics
question,
on their pet.
Where are you located?
Where are we located? So we are based out of Utah,
okay.
Salt Lake City, kind of greater Salt Lake City area. But
and how do my listeners find out more about you?
Yeah, but we are a an online telemedicine platform. It's jase.com. We are licensed to provide this service in all 50 states and also in every province province in Canada. And we're working on some other countries as I speak. But for those U.S. and Canada listeners, it's jase.com.
I love it. I'd love to talk to you again. This was really interesting. And thank you so much for being a guest here on the Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life and Business. Please share our show.
Oh, I'd love to come on again anytime.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you so much. All right. We are just going to roll right into our next and our last guest. And, of course, we have another doctor, Dr. Bruce Strober, MD, PhD, and FAAD. And, of course, we're going to be talking about GPP. It's a psoriasis. And, of course, joining us also is Brandon A., and he's living with this condition, and we're going to hear a little bit more about him. So stay with us. And let's bring him on.
Hi, Kim.
Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us here. And, of course, for our listeners, thank you so much for waking up with us, starting your day in a positive way. And today we're going to talk about really the pain and suffering of some rare skin diseases. And, of course, joining me is Bruce Strober. He's an MD, a PhD, FAAD. He's a clinical professor of dermatology at Yale University School of Medicine. And, of course, joining us with him is Brandon A. And Brandon is actually living with some of these things that we're going to be talking about. So welcome, and thank you so much for both being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so let's just start with Dr. Strober. And is it Dr. Strober? Is that correct?
That's right.
Great. What is GPP and why is it important to get diagnosed?
GPP stands for generalized pustular psoriasis. It's a very rare type of psoriasis, not like your common plaque psoriasis many of your listeners probably are familiar with. It involves a chronic inflammation of the skin that often results in unpredictable flares. And the flares involve red patches widespread over the body, redness. And in those patches are pus pimples or pustules. And importantly, it's not just an appearance issue. Patients with GPP feel unwell. They feel fatigue, arthritis, fever, chills, but the skin actually hurts. It's sore, it's painful, it's tender. And ultimately, patients with GPP, because they're so unwell, and if untreated, might need to be hospitalized. And in some instances, hospitalized GPP patients can pass away. So that puts into perspective the importance of diagnosing this rare type of psoriasis and bringing to bear effective therapies, of which there are a few now, to help control the condition.
Wow. And that's, you know, I mean, I've never even heard of this. And I'm sure some of my listeners have never heard of this unless they're dealing with it or if it's in their family. I know my grandmother had psoriasis. She always had her wrist wrapped up or her arm wrapped up, you know. So let me back up a little bit. Can you talk to us about who you are and how, you know, what people should be looking at for?
Well, I am a dermatologist, and I specialize in patients with severe skin diseases. And what people should be looking for when they have a rash like GPP is it's pretty widespread. The pus pimples are throughout the redness. And importantly, they don't feel good. They can't easily live with this condition because it's disabling. They feel tremendous fatigue. They feel muscle pain. They feel joint aches. They feel fever and chills. So it's not really a disease that taps you lightly on the shoulder. It's more like a ton of bricks.
Wow. Wow. And how, like, I mean, is this something that is huge or rare in our,
it's in very,
our population?
It's very rare. It's probably the rarest variant of psoriasis. So your average doctor, not dermatologist, probably never sees a case in his or her own career, entire career. And dermatologists specifically who are trained in this condition might only see at most one case every year. So we're talking about a condition that requires dermatologists not only to be trained on it, but have their antennae up so they recognize it when it potentially walks through the door.
So I'm sure it's very much misdiagnosed, correct?
It probably is often misdiagnosed, particularly by non-dermatology trained providers.
Okay. And so, you know, I know like lupus has skin lesions. Is it similar to something like that or much more severe?
I would say, well, not trying to trivialize lupus when it's on the skin, it can be very severe, but on average, a person with a GPP flare is much less well than a person who has lupus on the skin. And again, not taking away from lupus, because people with lupus on the skin can have lupus in their entire body, but GPP is really one of the most disabling skin conditions that affects people.
That's incredible. Okay, and so are there more men living with it or more women with this disease?
It's really an equal opportunity condition. Some studies actually show women are more affected than men, but either sex can be affected. And it's really all age groups, though preferentially it appears in middle-aged adults in their 40s and 50s. But as you'll learn from Brandon, it can appear in early childhood as well.
Okay, and I'm so glad you brought Brandon up. Brandon, thank you so much for being here. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, yourself and when you were diagnosed and how it impacted your life.
So I was a rare case where I was just a baby. I was 11 months old when I had my first flare-up. And it started out with a red rash on my chest that overnight led with fevers and spread from my chest to being on my arms and completely covering my back as well. I was rushed and admitted into Children's Hospital, where I was there for many months before I got a proper diagnosis. I had doctors of all sorts of different specialties coming in to look at me, to run different tests, to try to figure out what was going on with me, because it was just such a rare disorder that most of them had never heard of it, let alone seen anybody with it, let alone a little baby with it.
Wow. And I want to ask both of you, it's called the unwearablecollection.com. Talk to us about that.
The Unwearable Collection is a fantastic installment created by Bart Hess, who has taken testimonials of myself and other GPP patients and has created these amazing pieces of art that represent some of the struggles that we've had to live with having GPP, from the pain and the isolation to the deadliness of the disease to the uncertainty of when your next flare-up might be, and to the intensity of the flare-up when it happens. It was so moving to myself to see words in a description of my flare-ups put into such incredible artwork. And I'm super excited when people see it and then become more curious and interested about GPP, because being such a rare disorder, we really need to get that awareness spread. And if bringing art into the equation is one way of helping, then I think it's just an incredible thing to have around.
There you go. It's another way of communicating. There's so many ways, and what a beautiful way to really communicate what you have gone through and you know, probably so many others that maybe haven't figured it out. What are the experiences that you're living with GPP?
You know, when I was younger, it was a lot more difficult. There weren't as many treatment options out there, let alone there was no treatment specifically designed for GPP. So I had to almost be a test dummy, a lot of trial and error to figure out what kind of medications worked and what kind of medications didn't work. And it was always very difficult, when I would have to end up in a hospital because so many doctors knew nothing about GPP or how to treat it. And there's a lot of different ways that they treat it that weren't effective and some that could actually be more harmful than not treating it.
Right. And what was, to your knowledge, the most effective thing that, was done for you?
So the most effective treatment I've had has been biologics. And when I was younger, those weren't even around, let alone an option. The biologic I take now is an immune suppressant, and it helps stop me from flaring up. It's not foolproof. I can still flare up even while I'm on the medication, but typically they are a lot less severe.
Okay. And does stress bring it on?
Stress is definitely a big factor, and I always try to keep positive about it to avoid stress and also, you know, trauma, like getting injured or, you know, anything like that can also bring it on. But it's also really important to know that not every GPP patient is going to be the same. They're going to have to really figure out their own triggers to what causes their flare-ups.
Got it. Know your body. Try to learn your body. Is it something that runs in your family, or are you an isolated case?
I'm an isolated case. There's been no history in my family of GPP specifically.
Okay. And are you married and children?
I am not.
Okay. So I would love to ask just the doctor, Dr. Strober, is that something that Brandon will have to worry about, or is it that's not really, it's not reproductive?
No, there's a genetic basis for GPP. I don't think we would ever counsel a person like Brandon to strongly concern himself about it, but nevertheless, I always say if you're a parent with a chronic skin condition that has a genetic basis, it's helpful that you are aware about the genetic risks. And if you have children, you kind of keep aware for them if it were to develop in them, and you are more or better able to steer them to the right therapies. I would never say, avoid that partnership because your risk goes up, or don't have children, that's for sure.
Right.
But you just live with the possibility that maybe your offspring could have the same disease, even though it might be unlikely.
Got it. And so I guess let's just ask, if patients that are listening right now, or they know somebody that is going through some of these symptoms of GPP, what advice would you give them?
I think they need to find a dermatologist who specializes in skin conditions, severe medical skin conditions, who is willing to partner with them over the long haul, because this is not a one and done type relationship. Patients with GPP need to have long-standing relationships with their dermatologists because the therapies are ongoing and chronic. They're not interrupted and need to be monitored and sometimes need to be adjusted just so the patient keeps under more or less a normalized style of life, the ability to function both personally and professionally on a daily basis.
Yeah. And Brandon, is there anything that you can add to that too?
Just like Dr. Strober said, it's when you find your dermatologist, you really just build up a relationship with them. I had the same dermatologist for over 30 years that was always there in my corner. Anytime I needed anything, he would be right there picking up the phone, talking to other doctors who were trying to treat me. And it's been a bit of a struggle since he actually retired, finding another dermatologist, even though they specialize in skin disorders, to find one that, is well informed about GPP.
Right. I love it. Okay. Well, some really good information. And I'm so glad that you both shared it here on the Kim Pagano Show. We talk about the brighter side of life in business, and we know life happens to us, but it's how we walk through it. Where can my listeners go for more information and to learn more about this?
Well, a good website would be gppandme.com. It tells a lot about the disease itself, patient testimonials and a link to the Unwearable Collection. There's a great video there, which I found very impactful, describing how that art installation was created and ultimately came to fruition.
There you go. And Brandon, the unwearablecollection.com is the other one that you have a passion for?
That's correct. And you can also find a link to the Unwearable Collection through gppandme.com.
There you go. All right. Well, please, let's connect on social. And again, thank you so much. Please share our show. And thank you for being guests here on the Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. All right. Take care. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Thank you so much. I hope that you found this as interesting as I did. And again, thank you for joining us here on the Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life. I always end our shows with a moment of happiness. You only live once, but if you work it right, once is enough. So with that, have a great rest of your weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.
Song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry.